the coming up today so you can put it in your own words?
What would I want to put it in my own words for? There's words already here.
You can do that, or you can like read it word for word.
It's right. Like, you mean like I normally do? Is that what you're trying to say?
Yeah. Tom, the physical representation of phoning it in.
Well, you know, I'm still in bed, if I'm perfectly honest. I'm just rolled over talking into my iPhone at the moment.
Standard.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, this is what happens. You pay peanuts, you get lazy Tom in bed. I'm quite cheap, really.
You must have been busy this week, though, because I noticed the Smashing Security podcast said they didn't have a guest, and you obviously weren't available for it.
Yeah, exactly.
Mr. Rent a guest.
Obviously, my rates of a packet of peanuts was too much for them this time.
Listening to the Host Unknown podcast.
Hello, hello, hello. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, and welcome to the Host Unknown podcast from wherever you are joining us. We're episode 58 now, although as I met with some team members recently, and this guy was telling me he's listening to our podcast in order, and he's not quite worked out the numbering scheme yet. So
no, because it is actually 62.
Is it really sick? I'm gonna have to go through and actually
not
do...
by your labeling. No, your labeling's consistent, but in terms of actual podcast produced.
Certain amount of effort. We technically are putting in more than 100% of effort, you know. But that diminishes with every episode we add.
Yeah.
So welcome, Andy. How are you?
I normally say not too bad, but today I've had a bit of a sparky situation in my office, my recently renovated office with my ceiling fan, and the light switch was making some very crackly noises earlier. So much so that I had to reach for the fire extinguisher. I thought I'd get through this recording.
You shook up a can of Red Bull, is what you
shook
said.
Shook up a can of Red Bull. But, the Russian fire extinguisher. But no, I've actually had to surrender her, and I called around for some sparkies to so you can get here like ASAP.
Just
to switch off the lights in the house.
Flick the fuse at the household unit, unwire it.
That's what I'm worried about. That didn't trip.
Well, no, because it's not overloading. It's just loose. You've just got a loose cable, that's all.
Yeah. I mean, I'd quite like a professional to come out and give that assessment. Rather than you hearing my description of what I believe the problem to be and then diagnosing. I'm aware of Google.
I've had the 240 volts through me more than once. It's fine. It's absolutely fine.
Oh dear.
In fact, I remember electrocuting myself as a kid when I stuck my fingers into my nightlight socket. I took the bulb out.
Curiosity, right?
Basically, innit?
And it that thing where you could see your skeleton through your skin.
Yeah, that's right. My hair went. Yeah. Quite literally went.
That's where it started. That's your origin story, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. It's my Professor Xavier origin story. Oh dear. Talking of X-Men and mutants, Jav, how are you?
I'm very good. Well, I'm saying very good. Having a garage door replaced today because
is that a euphemism?
My broke. No.
Oh right, okay.
I thought that you converted your garage into an office.
Half of it.
The other half. His bike's in.
Yeah. The bike, the tools, and every bit of junk from the house is in the other half.
It just gets thrown in there.
Yeah, exactly. So what happened is it's one of those electric rolling shutter ones.
Yeah.
And a few weeks ago, I parked my bicycle in and the wheel was still sticking out a bit and I didn't notice. And it came down, the shutter went on the wheel and it kept on unrolling and it snapped at the top. So I had no usable rolling shutter for the people that are probably are sitting on the edge of their seat wondering what the cliffhanger is to this story. It basically broke, and new people are in, and they're fitting it as we record.
So you're pushing you're pushing Crisp's capabilities to the limit.
I am, yeah. This is the field test of Crisp. Is it as good as what it says it is?
Also, while they're there, what you should do is, you know, Thunderbird style, have some palm trees put outside the garage. So as the doors open, the palm trees kind of flick down and open so that, you know, and then, I don't know, some sort of like...
Oh, that is such a good idea. That's such a good idea.
I think that would be awesome. I'll be right back.
Yeah.
You know what? I kid you not. Last week, I've forgotten the name of the show. All I remembered was the name Dan Tanner, the main character from it. And last week, someone reminded me the show was called Vegas, with the S was a dollar sign.
Oh,
and this is a cop show. He was a private investigator in the 70s or so.
Yeah.
But he was so cool. He had this red convertible car, and the garage door would open, and he would pull into his living room, basically. It was like a big open-plan living room. His car would be in one corner. His kitchen would be in the other. It was just... absolutely. And I saw that and I thought, you know, that's what I need to do here. I need to knock through the partition wall in the garage, have my bike just come straight into my desk.
Yeah. And then, but as you drive in, you'd hit all the cardboard boxes, wouldn't you? Which is also kind of a.
I was wondering, did his family die from carbon monoxide poisoning?
Yes.
Because they're like in the 70s, links, you know. Health and safety is not what it was today.
It was either that or the asbestos in the roof or the lead in the paint. It was one of those. But whatever time they lived it well.
Those old 70s cars and even the newer ones, I mean, like mine, 2004, they smell of petrol constantly.
Yeah.
So what have we got coming up for you today? Well, in our regular and most favouritist slot of the week. This week in InfoSec takes us back to the earliest reported spam complaint, which is apparently probably older than you realise. I mean, I don't know how much older, but, you know, what are we talking about, 70s, 60s, something like that? Rant of the Week tells another story of big tech chipping away at privacy like it's no big deal. Billy Big Balls this week sees Norton doing something either really smart or really stupid. We'll let you make up your own mind on that one. Industry News brings us the latest and greatest InfoSec news from around the globe. And Tweet of the Week resurfaces the debate on the difference between conferences. We no longer bring up the topic of little people on this show, but when we do have something to say, we do like to keep it short to confirm the little people will never be returning. So anyway, let's move on, shall we, from carbon monoxide poisoning and electrocution, and let's go straight on to
This Week in InfoSec.
Yeah, it's that part of the show where we take a stroll down InfoSec memory lane to revisit events of yesteryear via content liberated from the Today in InfoSec Twitter account. And I'm talking, wondering whether or not Jav and Tom are on the other end of this, because...
I'm here, don't worry.
Tom's dealing with a delivery and Jav is dealing with his garage.
I'm here.
We multitask, what can we say? Shouting
from across the room.
This is not added in post at all. Ha, ha, ha.
So there was actually, I'll just actually mention something. To a story on the Host Unknown supplemental podcast, which is also goes by the name Smashing Security. It's obviously the Host Unknown podcast is the Smashing Security release candidate, and then, you know, what they do is the addendum. So Gramps was talking about the movie War Games, and he totally exposed himself by admitting that he's never seen such a great piece of history. But he also missed the opportunity to highlight the fact that it was released in the US 38 years ago this week, on the 3rd of June in 1983. And if you recall back then, obviously, it wasn't released in the UK until the 18th of August, you know, nearly 4 months later, because back then movies in the US used to come out way before we got them in the UK.
Yeah.
And I'm still not quite sure why, but there's always like one kid in school that had gone to the US, seen a film, and then come back and ruined it for everyone. But yeah, anyway, for anyone who hasn't seen that film, should definitely watch it. A film about a high school hacker who war-dialed a NORAD computer, guessed a weak password, and then nearly triggered World War III. However, that is not the main story. I just wanted to get that out there because as soon as I heard him talking about war games, I thought, damn, they've already stolen one of the stories, but they didn't. They missed it. So anyway, this first one, and unfortunately, Jav, your younger years will preclude you from being expected to know this one. But Tom, can you guess when the first record of frustration with electronic spam was referenced?
1950.
Not too close at all. It was actually the 1st of June, 1864.
What? How does that work?
Yeah, well, so the first record of electronic spam.
They didn't even have electricity then. So, I mean, well, they had to do email in the dark, didn't they?
Email was so much harder at night time. So a recipient was so infuriated by the dentist's poppycock that he composed a letter to the editor of the Times about the telegram that he received, begging the newspaper to kindly demand a stop to the nonsense.
And begging the newspaper? Interesting.
Yeah, so there is a great a screenshot here, and it's addressed to the editor of the Times. Sir, on my arrival home late yesterday evening, a telegram by London District Telegraph, addressed in full to me, was put in my hands. It follows: Messrs. Gabriel, Dentists, 27 Harley Street, Cavendish Square. Until October, Messrs. Gabriel's professional attendance at 27 Harley Street will be 10 till 5. And he goes on to say, I have never had any dealings with Messrs. Gabriel and beg to ask by what right do they disturb me by a telegram, which is evidently simply the medium of advertisement. A word from you would, I feel sure, put a stop to this intolerable nuisance. I enclose the telegram and am your faithful servant. And that is possibly the first recorded version of unsubscribe that we have on record.
Asking the editor of the Times to deal with this is, you know, it's a bit like us tweeting Piers Morgan and saying, can you tell this guy sharp?
But, well, you say that, but you think, like, in the 90s, the amount of people that would contact your ISP, do you remember that? If people like some of the stuff that you had going on, they'd contact your ISP.
Abuse at ISP.net. It kept me gainfully employed for a couple of years, so don't knock it.
As an abuser to rent or to...
Yeah,
no,
sorry.
No, basically pretending that I understood what the ideal S-logs were saying. Reverse looking up anything that looked like, there's a bit too many connections here coming in for my liking and sending abuse at ISP.net. And then on the week, I said, yes, I detected and put an end to at least, 24 attacks this week.
Proactively mitigated. But, 157 years ago, the first recorded episode.
Wow. How times have changed.
But the best part was, you know, Gabriel's dentist at Harley Street is a brilliant dentist. He should have gone.
Well, he certainly knew how to advertise, right? He probably bought a mailing list of people.
That's right.
Just telegram them. Did his paper click or whatever?
A telegram must have been a really expensive form of direct mail, of direct advertising.
So there's a couple of things in mind. One, this is to the Times, so we've already sort of established the
readership,
the social strata of the readership. The other is, it's a dentist in Harley Street, and Harley Street has always been the
inflated prices,
the medical centre of London, as it were, from a private practitioner's perspective. So I think we're talking just a lot of money flapping around here.
Probably worth it, right?
Yeah.
But yeah. Anyway, so the second story I have is only from 7 years ago, but I do feel that I still don't have the answers that I'd be looking for to truly understand what happened here. So if anyone can fill in the blanks for me, it'd be great. So this is from the 28th of May 2014. The TrueCrypt website unexpectedly announced that it the development of TrueCrypt had ended and that the tool was no longer secure. So any visitors on the who went to the website from 28th of May 2014 found a message which just simply said, the development of TrueCrypt has ended in May 2014 after Microsoft terminated support of Windows XP. Windows 8, 7, Vista and later offer integrated support for encrypted disks and virtual disk images. Such integrated support is also available on other platforms. So if you didn't know, TrueCrypt was this open source sort of disk crypto package, which had been around, you know, quite a while, like 10 years, I think, you know, from 2004 onwards, maintained by a group called the TrueCrypt Foundation, had versions for Windows, OS X, Linux, Android, really popular, over 30 languages supported across the world. And it worked by creating this virtual disk on your computer. And then anything written to that disk was encrypted. And it didn't sort of give a, it didn't let you know that it wasn't obvious to see that there was an encrypted disk on the machine. But, you know, if you use forensic tools, you could actually reveal that there was this TrueCrypt bootloader.
But you could also, it didn't have also have little tools like if you typed in a different password, it would show a different folder. So it was like, you know, if you would, if it was demanded that you open up your files on,
I didn't know
customs
that.
Or whatever. Yeah, I think it did. Because that was one of the advantages. Rather than it just being an encryption tool, it was the full suite. Maybe many of our listeners, I'm sure,
will know better. Sit there going, no, Tom, you got it wrong. Yeah, You're thinking of something else.
Yeah, exactly.
No, but it was strange that this open source project, which supported you know all these different environments, would just suddenly suggest people move to commercial solutions. And to this day, like, you know, we're still not sure what happened. So internally, what we do know is that with version 7.1a, there had been an audit on the code.
Yeah.
And then the announcement came sort of shortly after that they'd be discontinuing TrueCrypt. And then they released version 7.2, which was intentionally crippled and contained a lot of warnings in the code. And a lot of people believe, or that, you know, the most common or widely spread story is that an ongoing code audit, during that sort of ongoing code audit, an NSA-created backdoor was expected to be found in it. And it's really weird. Even now, the Wayback Machine doesn't have the pages from TrueCrypt.org. You know, it just says it's been excluded from the archive. But never in the history of software development had there been such an abrupt end, certainly where the developers didn't even fork their code. So still a lot of questions to be answered with this.
Because I used to use TrueCrypt, and they were working on a full disk encryption, because that was the difference.
Yeah.
You know, because you could get...
FDE wasn't that widespread back then.
Well, it was third-party, wasn't it?
Yeah.
You know, whereas as they said, you know, Windows 7 onwards, Vista and onwards had BitLocker and full disk encryption, and then shortly afterwards, OS X.
They have it by default as well. Yeah.
Well, yeah, but originally it was just you know by folder as well, and then it was, and then I think shortly after BitLocker came out, they released their own. But it was odd because it was like. Fully on that, I'm pretty sure I read that they were going to expand into full disk encryption, blah blah blah, and that they were doing the audit because, was it you know companies were using it and the use of open source was
very popular solution as well.
It was very popular, but as an auditor, you know, well, it's open source, you know, anybody can you know find access to this code and da 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 da. But so I think I thought they were doing an audit to prove quite how good it was. You know, and I don't know, but the part of me thinks maybe they found something in there that they hadn't put in the code. Maybe something had been included and they just thought we're completely compromised here.
Yeah, I think that's where a lot of the theories have been.
Yeah, it's a really unfortunate demise because that sort of thing really, I think, helps keep, you know, those kind of technologies moving forwards.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I see. There's a new one coming out, VeraCrypt, which is based on their code or is using some of their code.
Yeah, they did something clever with that.
Did they?
Yeah, so I'm not entirely sure, but yeah, they got around the So they changed the license of TrueCrypt just before they ended it, saying that, you know, you couldn't fork it. But yeah, Veracrypt actually did something clever with that licensing, where a lot of it is based on TrueCrypt. But
did they do a search and replace on the phrase search true and replace it with Vera?
Yeah, classic, yeah.
There you go. Yeah, so it's our license.
Copy it.
Now.
Don't make it obvious. Yeah.
Oh dear! Wow, God, I hadn't thought about TrueCrypt for a long time.
No.
Well, 7 years roughly. Excellent. Thank you, Andy. Though fascinating stuff. Even though I missed half of it.
This week in InfoCert.
Sketchy presenters, weak analysis of content, and consistently average delivery. Like and subscribe now.
So, time, I believe, to move on to this week's...
Listen up!
Rant of the week.
It's time to motherfucking rage!
So, this week's rant of the week falls to me... and I'm desperately trying to work out how I can bring Apple into this, but it's about Amazon, and their new mesh network called Sidewalk, of all things. You can tell they're an American company.
That's very American, isn't it?
Yeah, it's just, you know, let's just call it pavement.
They talk about this about 6 months ago.
Who did?
Me.
Okay.
When they actually announced Sidewalk back then. But go on.
Yeah, this is just a refresher, Jeff.
Yeah,
just
don't talk to me like that, Jeff. Talk to Andy. He does the show notes. He gives us stories.
So you guys give me so much grief when I'm like, hey, do you remember that story? And you're like, yes, we covered it in episode 37 or 42, depending on how you're counting it.
Like I say, Andy, speak to Andy. I don't remember anything. I just read the words in front of me. So Sidewalk is a mesh network. So all of Amazon's like Echo devices and Ring doorbells, etc., are from June 8th going to automatically or default to being able to create their own mesh network that taps into other people's broadband, and that's other people's broadband through their Echo devices, as well as any public Wi-Fi and all that sort of thing. It sounds kind of, you know, makes sense in a way. I know BT and BT Broadband, they have their own... that you can share your Wi-Fi with the public on their thing by default and all that sort of thing. And I think there's a certain community spirit mindedness to it. The thing that really gives me pause for thought and makes me think that this is, you know, possibly in response maybe to Apple and Apple's AirTags is that the one specific device outside of the Amazon network that is specified as being able to take direct advantage of this is Tile. The little sort of personal tracking devices that Apple's AirTags are up against. And Tiles are now also able to take advantage of this mesh. So as you walk past someone's house with Sidewalk enabled with your Tile device, your Tile will actually communicate with said network. A bit of the tech here, that the mesh network is created through either, you know, a low energy Bluetooth, through Wi-Fi, through basically anything that it can use to talk to the network. And then it means that the devices can continue to talk to Amazon and phone home even if your internet has gone down. Although they do say that they're going to cap Amazon data to, 500 meg a month, something like that. But that's probably more than enough if all we're talking about is just basic logging and stuff like that. Obviously they've done some security papers and stuff on this, and on the face of it, they look all right. They look okay. But the challenge is that what something like this does is enable people, if not immediately, but certainly in the near future as vulnerabilities are exposed, etc., to snoop on other people. The use of the Tile network to, because the Tile network, for instance, doesn't have an anti-snooping mechanism, can allow people to stalk someone using a Tile device without them realizing it, because there's no method or notification that allows them to tell that person that they're being tracked by the Tile. So this could, I'm personally not a huge fan of this. I think it's just a little bit too close. It's potentially creating almost almost its own, an Amazon dark web, as it were. But, you know, because this is almost creating an internet pipe of its own creation.
Tom, you've got to trademark that term, Amazon dark web. And this will be the title of your talk at DEF CON.
This will be my moment. This is my moment.
It is your moment. I would go and see that talk. Absolutely.
I'm going to have to tweet something about Sidewalk being Amazon's dark web.
Yeah,
out.
Tweet it now quickly so you gain the ownership of that term. And then it will be like the Amazon dark web. And, you know, you can just like come up with whatever convoluted, far-reaching, one in a billion hypothetical scenario through which something bad could happen.
Yeah.
But it would be great, I think. It would draw the crowds.
Man. Woo. Well, you know, I'm glad you're my agent. So it's you really helped point me in the right direction. Although you did break me off midstream. I'm like, oh my God, what the hell was I talking about now? I've forgotten.
It doesn't matter. No one was interested in what you were saying.
No, it's the sound bites, Tom. We just need the sound bites. Yeah. No one cares about the full story.
Actually, you know what? I'm going to contradict you a bit. I think it's not such a bad idea that you're making it out to be, at least not from the Amazon context. I think this is a direction which a lot of technologies have been heading for a long time, like you rightly pointed out with BT and everything.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think what I've put into the show notes now, Amazon actually did publish a privacy and security white paper on this.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. That was the one I was referencing.
All right. Yeah. And it is very detailed. I don't understand all of it. So that means it is quite technical. But I think what we need to do is, rather than say, oh, I feel a bit uncomfortable with it, like old people would say, is to say, well, this is kind of like the future of the Internet of Things. How do we ensure that it's managed in a secure manner?
And maybe, I think I get that. I think partly I just don't trust Jeff Bezos.
No.
That's probably my biggest challenge here.
And the fact that it's these big companies that are normalizing this sort of abuse of data.
Yeah.
You know, Facebook have been doing it for years. Amazon are on that bandwagon. Google have, you know, used to do it, probably still do it. But, you know, it's these big companies that just own the entire industry. And, you know, you can't do anything about it. And, you know, once one person gets it in, you know, just makes it normal. Everyone does it.
Yeah. That's what you said. Absolutely.
The Anarchy Podcast.
The Anarchy Podcast. They're quite the reverse.
No. I think it's, you're right. I mean, I think this is just a symptom of that bigger cause. You're absolutely right that we've given far too much power to far fewer a collection of companies, and they dictate everything. So we can agree or disagree, but, you know, these things are going to go ahead. So
they are.
And life is pointless. Let's give up.
No. That cuddly man, Tim Cook, he told, you know, I trust him. I'll give him all my money. You know, the only problem is they can't deliver like a dog bouncy ball, you know, rubber ball by 10 o'clock tonight. Otherwise,
they can for me though.
No, Amazon, Apple can't.
Oh, good point.
Amazon can, and that's a real challenge here. So I'm an Amazon user. That, you know, Prime. You know, I've got a Prime account, and I use them an awful lot just because, frankly, I can't be asked to go out shopping. It's much easier from here. But I dislike the fact that they actually have so much of my information and so much, they know so much about me. and the fact, as I said, I don't trust Jeff Bezos. And that's a very personal and subjective opinion. And that's where my concern comes from. So we did that story a few months ago about the US law enforcement getting access to the Ring cameras.
So that's
another, you know, example of Amazon just handing over people's personal stuff. I wouldn't say without their permission, but certainly it's opting out rather than opting in.
Yeah, which and goes against everything is. That GDPR was supposed to protect people against, right?
Yeah, but this service is an opt-out, not an opt-in.
Yeah.
And that I think in itself is sets it up for a bad precedent. You're right, Jack. I mean, you know, I love a good bit of tech, and I love a good, you know, I've got more tech in my house than I know what to do with, you know. But I sometimes just think I get that really sort of uncomfortable feeling that this, you know, that we are on the brink of the Amazon dark web. Trademark.
Yeah, trademark. Yes, very good. We need a logo with it. We need a jingle. We need a website.
Right, I'm on Fiverr now.
Yeah, that's right.
So Tom, though, you are into tech, and this is going down a slight tangent, but I think it's an important point. You've got a ton of tech. You've got your all your things. You talk, and your curtains open and close. Yeah, your lights change, and everything. And you know, someone the robotic vacuum comes out. The everything. Have you ever considered like adding up the cost of everything you spent on tech?
Yeah.
And then the annual cost of things like electricity that you to run it and the internet, maintenance fees and subscription fees and everything. And have you worked out maybe it could be cheaper to just hire a butler?
Who do you think talks to the blinds to tell them to open? I don't do it. It's beneath me.
But I think you could get an Alfred.
Alfred, yeah. <that's...
laughs> Come in and, like, you know, he'd make you tea exactly how you like it. And,
yeah.
You know, would open the curtains, close the curtains, do your bed, everything.
That would be nice, wouldn't it? That would be nice. Let's read me a story with a happy ending to help me go to sleep at night, you know. When you said that, adding up the costs, I was thinking, yeah, but, you know, that if I add up the costs, you know, obviously I'm spending a certain amount of money on this stuff. But frankly, it brings me joy. And there's very few things in this world that bring anybody joy anymore. So, I'll take joy from my inanimate objects.
Well, this should be renamed to Sad Ending of the Week, shouldn't it?
Yeah, that's a hollow existence. I'm sorry,
that's
Tom.
That's right, yeah.
you know when Tom dies and, like, we'll be listening through all these podcasts and, like, the signs were there.
Yeah, he says he's going off to get a delivery from the door. He's actually just, you know, sitting in the corner of the room, rocking and weeping.
Why can I hear a car engine running?
Oh, that's my red sports car in my living room.
He finally did it. He finally got it in the living room.
Anyway.
You need to find out it's an electric car and it doesn't work that way.
Yeah. It took me ages to find the exhaust pipe on the thing. Anyway, that was this week's
Rant of the Week. Sketchy presenters, weak analysis of content, and consistently average delivery. Like and subscribe now.
So, Jav, I think we're going to move over to you now onto a story that we're pretty sure is new. Maybe we ran it a few weeks ago, or maybe you mentioned it a few weeks ago, but we're going to give it to you again anyway.
Hi, folks. After installing antivirus software, is your computer still usable? Do you still have a few CPU cycles available after the crap software has forced it to its knees? Well, Norton have a solution for that. Built-in crypto mining in your antivirus. Norton LifeLock, the company that offers the consumer products Broadcom didn't want when it bought Symantec, has started to offer Ethereum mining as a feature of its Norton 360 security suite. This feature, creatively called Norton Crypto, is going to harness the power of your graphic cards to mine Ethereum. And I think that is genius because literally it will pay for itself, won't it? You buy the product and within like a month you'll be breaking even, and after that it's all quids in. I think it's a brilliant idea.
So hang on. An antivirus company, you install their antivirus software and then it mines cryptocurrency for you. Mining cryptocurrency in a country where electricity is expensive and where the most people who would buy this product in the first place probably don't have the most powerful computers anyway.
And you're probably going to have to give them your, well, it's probably going to have to store your wallet and your credentials and all sorts of stuff on this said dodgy computer.
Shit, this sounds like a bad idea.
But you know what? If I had a granddad still alive, I can imagine this is, you know, I would turn up for Sunday lunch one time and he'd start telling me about this new thing that he's purchased and now he's into the Bitcoin market.
Yeah.
I think that this is bringing, or the thought of bringing crypto to the masses. But there's no way your home computer is going to mine fast enough to make any sort of dent on.
No, none at all.
Yeah, something none valid here. But what would be great is if you could actually hack this and then get everyone else's machines to do this for you. You know, when you start pooling resources.
They could call it, Symantec Zombie?
Yes. Botnet. Yeah, Norton Botnet.
Yeah, yes. What, Norton Botnet? There we go.
No, the Norton Dark Web. Hey.
Hey, hands off.
We've just received a takedown notice from Amazon Dark Web Incorporated.
I think it's such a stupid idea. It is.
It's awful.
Just ridiculous. I mean, antivirus or whatever, you just hasn't got the best reputation to begin with. And a lot of these things
certainly not traditional antivirus.
No, not traditional. No. But a lot of these are intensive on your CPU and
it
grinds your computer to a halt and what have you. On top of that, you're going to be like, you know, your lights are going to be flickering like Andy's office lights as the computer like
crunches its way through.
Yeah, it's just I don't know who thought this would be a good idea or, you know, whether the,
it does remind me of, you remember that SETI at home thing, the search for extraterrestrial life
and the old screensavers in the office.
And there was a cancer one, you know, folding that was it was. Decoding genetic sequences to look for searches to cures for cancer and stuff. You see, that stuff I'm all for. You know, if you want to, you know, one, you install it separately anyway, and it's using your screensaver, and it's actually doing something for the greater good, you know, something that's for human betterment, you know, cure for cancer, search for extraterrestrial life, you know, pay your money, take your choice, whichever one you want. Pay your money, it's free, but do you know what I mean? And you know, and I remember they set up teams, didn't you? Could set up a team so your IT department could go up against the finance department and, you know, and see who was folding the most or who was, you know, who found more ETs than someone else and all that sort of stuff. But this reminds me of that Amazon dark web story in the sense that this feels like something that you have to opt out of rather than opt in again. It's like, install this, we'll give you AV, and by the way, you've made 15 pence in the last 3 months in Ethereum. It doesn't feel right.
Yeah, but hats off to whoever works at Norton LifeLock in their marketing department and whoever convinced everyone it was a good idea. I think that is a proper big balls
move. It's a Billy Big Balls move, but it may be a Billy Big Balls remove. If this doesn't go right for them,
that person was just looking at all the news about crypto, right? Saying, right, how do we get on? Yeah, damn, I wish I worked at another company because all we do is AV and crypto's in the news every day.
Maybe, like, Maybe they got given confusing sort of stats to hit, and they wanted to get, you know, they were told you need 100% utilization. And they looked at the CPU utilization of the average computer running Norton at 80%.
Unless we acquire McAfee.
Yeah, how do I get the next 20% of that CPU usage? I know, I'll start crypto mining. You know, so now your computer is running at peak efficiency at 100% all the time.
So what's weird about this is in the UK, a lot of the banks, I think, was it Lloyds earlier this week, have stopped allowing crypto payments. You're not allowed to use Binance or certain exchanges.
To pay into their accounts or something?
Yeah.
Is that a money laundering thing, do you think, or just a...
I think that's what they're shaping it up as.
Or just a flex.
But Lloyds obviously own Halifax, Bank of Scotland, MBNA as well. So you can't buy crypto with your credit card. They flagged the transactions as fraud simply because they are crypto related. HSBC as well, I think bank no longer supports deposits and withdrawals from exchanges.
So maybe Norton's next move is to set up like a money handling service that will take your Ethereum and will give you cash minus 10% to then place that money into your bank account because banks won't take the money from it.
Well, yeah, I mean, I guess we're going to see the Norton Bank.
Norton Bank. Is it going to have one of those secured by Norton things on the front door?
So, yeah, not only do we secure your PC, we also secure your money in our vaults.
Your stupidity.
This is just incredible.
Yeah. Absolutely amazing, but I think it does very much qualify for a
Billy Big Balls of the Week.
I know we don't take this show seriously, but really that company needs to take itself a little bit more seriously. But jeez. Well, Andy, is it that time of day yet, Andy?
Can't believe it is already that time of the show where we head over to our news sources over at the InfoSec PA Newswire who have been busy bringing us the latest and greatest security news from around the globe.
Industry news.
NCSC, act now to protect streaming accounts.
Industry news.
Interpol seizes $83 million headed for online scammers.
Industry news.
Meat processing giant JBS pulls IT plug after cyber attack.
Industry news.
Scripps notifying 147,000 people of data breach.
Industry news.
Teen crashes Florida school district's network.
Industry news.
Sextortion lands inmate in federal prison.
Industry news.
Battle for the Galaxy. 6 million gamers hit by data leak.
Industry news.
Ransomware disrupts largest ferry service in Massachusetts.
Industry news.
Mandiant to re-emerge after 1.2 billion FireEye sale.
Industry news.
And that was this week's
Industry news.
Huge if true.
Yeah, that Mandiant one is an interesting one. Like
FireEye. So they've just sold to FireEye, have they? Yeah. Or is it the other way around?
They've sold FireEye assets.
Yeah. Oh, they've sold assets to FireEye. Okay.
No. FireEye acquired Mandiant.
Right, yeah.
Back in the day.
Yes, yeah, yeah. That's what I figured. Yeah, yeah.
And then Kevin Mandia, who was the CEO of Mandiant, made his way as CEO of FireEye. And so it's FireEye and Mandiant all together. Yeah. So FireEye is mainly the product side and Mandiant is the services and the IOC sort of they popularize IOCs and what have you. But now they're selling the FireEye side of the business, which is all their products. Their tin.
Yeah.
To a private equity firm of all people called STG.
Right.
And for 1.2 billion in cash. STG, actually, the private equity firm, they bought McAfee Enterprise. few months ago for $4 billion in cash. And they also bought RSA Security.
I can hear, see a merger.
Well, they've got a bit of cash floating around, right?
Yeah. But thing is, the way private equity works, though, typically, and this isn't true for all, but they flip. What they do, they'll get something that's sort of like flatlining a bit. And FireEye hasn't been the most profitable part of the business for a couple of years now. So they get something that's flatlining. They'll strip out any innovative parts of that business and they'll sweat the assets that are making money. And then they'll mush them together. So there are quite a few of these things. So they'll mush them all then together into this massive sweat box that is making them some money. And then a couple of years down the line, they'll flip it all for a tidy profit.
So FireEye, McAfee, and RSA are going to be squashed together into some Frankenstein's monster of a thing to be sold in a few years' time.
It's typically what happened. I'm not saying this is what's going to happen here. I have no insider knowledge, but these are not buy shares or stocks based on my opinion.
The value of your investments may go down as well as up.
Exactly. But it's interesting to see how this will pan out.
This needed to be almost a Billy Big Balls move because, you know, Mandiant is acquired by FireEye. Kevin Mandiant then becomes the CEO of FireEye, who then sells FireEye to retain Mandiant. Like, that's impressive.
This is what do you call it? It's like a Melinda Gates move, isn't it?
Yeah. or a What's-Her-Face Bezos move.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. I couldn't remember her name, otherwise I was going to mention her.
Mrs. Bezos.
Yeah.
The ex-Mrs. Bezos.
Oh, man. Sorry. No, this is a joke, ladies and gentlemen. We're not sexist. Please don't cancel us. Cancel Tom. He's the old white man. If anyone needs cancelling, it's Tom.
Yeah, that's fine. The one about meat processing or meat pulling, whatever you like to call it.
Yeah, Jeff. The meat processor.
Meat processing giant JBS. I heard the other day, it was said without irony, JBS, they're the fifth largest meat processing company in the USA. It's fifth largest? What?
They're the largest meat processor in the world, right?
No, they're fifth largest. They're not the biggest.
In the world?
Fifth largest in the world.
No, I thought it was the largest in the world.
Literally the largest meat processor in the world.
No, I thought, I heard they were the fifth largest. Oh, well, if that's not true. Anyway, if there are any meat processing experts in the audience, please.
If you're listening to this while you're plucking chickens.
Yeah. No, we don't want anybody doing that contacting
plucking
us.
Plucking chickens. Oh, not
right. Okay, right.
Not choking. Yeah, move on. Let's move on. What else we got?
We'll pull this one out. And this one, sextortion lands inmate in federal prison. Surely they were already there.
Well, do you know, I mean, I started reading it and it's like an inmate from the South Carolina. And it's like, okay, right. You're right. As soon as we head to that direction of the US, it's either got to be South Carolina or Florida, right? You know, So this person, was already serving a 12-year sentence for a cyber scam to blackmail military members already. But he basically posed as a young woman on a dating site, which he'd smuggled a smartphone into prison with him. And then just
a very small one.
A very small one.
In the prison pocket.
Yeah, and then the old classic, get pictures of attractive women online. Nothing to do with him. And then sort of tricking military personnel, to share personal information with them. And, nudes of themselves and then blackmail them.
That's quite impressive to do that from inside a prison.
Yeah, well, it is, but more impressive is that they state that more than 300 military members throughout the US were victims.
What?
And, you can take military members in two different ways in that story. to actually do this in such a dedicated way is fair play. I guess there's nothing else to do all day, right?
Yeah.
No.
I've got nothing else to do, so let me pretend to be a young woman and speak to military members. and try to blackmail them. That's a plan, because then I've got money that I can't spend because I'm in jail anyway.
And at the end of every day, hide my smartphone back up the prison pocket.
Yeah.
Right, well, I think on that note, we shall move on to tell you about...
This is the Host Unknown Podcast, home of Billy Big Ball Energy.
So, and in fact, I've been meaning to say this for the last few weeks. Folks, you've got to give us, if you're listening, please do give us some likes and some comments on the podcast pages. Like and subscribe, that's what I'm trying to say. Yeah, we could do some more reviews. That would be great. Even if you think we're a bunch of idiots, that's fine. It's a review nonetheless. Publish and be damned. But yeah, definitely need a few more of those. Wow, look at the time. Let's move swiftly on, shall we, to this week's...
Tweet of the Week.
And we always...
Tweet of the Week.
Play it twice.
Tweet of the Week.
Three times.
Tweet of the Week.
There we go. I don't know what happened there, but we're going with it.
You got the shakes, right? Your finger got stuck on the back.
Well, I am drinking a coffee.
That's the Alzheimer's. Not the Alzheimer's. The
Parkinson's.
Oh, man, Parkinson's, yeah.
That's all right. I'll take both.
Yeah. So this, I'm going to stick in a bonus one first of all, because there's one that made me chuckle. A guy called Chris Cox simply made a statement: "Excuse me, but why would I pay money for full disk encryption software when I can get Russian hackers to do it for free?" Yeah, this is a man that's thinking ahead there. Yeah. Just like you actually pay for the decryption key, Chris, not the encryption. so this is one which Jav actually shared, which I thought was quite funny, because I could already hear the comments before I even saw it. And it was it's a guy, Ryan Lorraine, who is the editor at large of Security Week and fellow podcaster. And he was quoting Charlie Miller of the Hacking a Running Jeep fame. If you're a crew, a respected member of the information security industry. Yeah. Obviously, I mean, I was hacking cars when they were still analog, you know, so it's good to see these kids grow up. Well, a coat hanger the old classic with the, do you remember the wind-up windows before you had electric windows? You could literally just stick your hands on the side of the windows and pull the windows down. It's brilliant. Like all these people with coat hangers doing fancy stuff. So anyway, Ryan simply says, "Charlie is wrong again." And what he is referencing is a tweet where Charlie says, "Even though everyone, and especially Ryan Lorraine, hates when I say it, Black Hat should only contain highly technical talks. Less technical talks are what RSA is for. Also, there shouldn't be a business hall or pay-to-speak slots." He says, "Yes, I lose this argument every year." Yeah, and I think it's an interesting one, because is Black Hat supposed to be technical? Do you want business talks at Black Hat? And is RSA supposed to be purely business talks? And do you want technical talks at RSA?
It just feels a lot like gatekeeping. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Now DEF CON, for instance, which is obviously on at the same time as
Black Hat, just after
Black Hat. The thing is that DEF CON has naturally become a very technical place. You know, I went there in 2018 and I didn't understand any of the talks, I must admit. And that's fine, but I really enjoyed meeting people there and, you know, chatting to people and actually sort of seeing the community as a whole. And I'm going again this year, as we know, and I'm really looking forward to it. But, you know, it has naturally become a very technical environment, and that's great. Black Hat is obviously a slightly more commercial offering, and so it's evolving and moving, and it's basically finding its niche, and its niche is a bit of both, I think, as is RSA. So there are technical talks at RSA, maybe not as heavily technical, but you know, there are technical talks at RSA as well, and that has found its niche. And obviously it's a very successful niche, given that 40-odd thousand people go there every year, if not more. So, you know, Black Hat USA should be what it needs to be, not what other people necessarily want it to be, in my opinion.
Well, yeah, no, I think you're right. I think so. Azeria replied on this Fox0x01, and she goes like, Black Hat has 18 tracks. Most of them are highly technical. Few of them are less technical. But with almost 100 talks, I'm sure everyone can find their jam. And I completely agree with her. I think there's a bit for everyone there. I think overall, I still think there are more technical talks in DEF CON than there are at RSA.
Yes, but, of course.
But the thing that I really take, sort of like, really makes me scratch my head. And I'm like, come on, I thought I'd expect more from someone making this kind of statement. It's like, there shouldn't be a business hall or pay-to-peak slot, speak slots. I mean, how do you think these conferences run? You know, the money just doesn't fall out of a magical money tree somewhere.
Yeah,
they are run as corporations. That you know, it's not like a bunch of hackers just getting together and putting on a conference, which one could argue DEF CON still kind of is. But Black Hat is run by a company, and they have to make money. And you know, this is how they make. Tom, you and I spoke about this at RSA a couple of years ago when we made a video about this.
That's right.
People want the best of both. They want, you know, a conference that is heavily subsidized with free food and drink or venues to meet people and everything, but then they don't want to pay for it, and they don't want anyone else to pay for it either, because then it feels like I'm being, marketed to.
Let's look at B-sides, right? Some of the most popular conferences around. In fact, you know, there must be, if you combine all of B-sides versus like all of RSA or all of Black Hat, there must be more people going to B-sides conferences overall, or at least they're up there in sheer volume. And they are independently run. They're not for profit, but they have talks from the community. But the reason they exist is sponsorship and having, you know, vendors pay to be there. And if that means that your keynote speaker is a pay to speak slot effectively, then that's a small price to pay. Now, if that keynote is crap, then that vendor will not be, asked back to become a platinum sponsor or whatever. But chances are, the way those things are run, they know exactly what sort of keynote is going to be given, etc. So, you know, you're right, Jeff. Look at us agreeing with each other like civilized people. But you're right, Jeff. You can't have this entirely independent and wholly technical stuff, conference and get-togethers, without somebody paying for the damn thing.
Well, I'm just surprised. It's crazy, like dogs and cats living in harmony. It's like, what's going on? It's just been a weird day all round, I think.
Yeah.
Were your lights flickering as we were agreeing with each other?
Yeah, I think someone's trying to contact me. I think just to top that off, I think B-Sides London do a very good job at making sure that those type of sponsors that do get any sort of airtime tone it down. I think, you know, so much was learned from that very first B-Sides in London, and it was really well put forward going for, you know,
and that was the only
events.
One I hadn't gone to. So
one of the sponsors did a talk, and it was like basically a sales pitch.
Right.
You know, he's got sort of 30 minutes, and it's just so out of touch with the vibe for the rest of the conference. Yeah.
But again, to be honest, that was the first one.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Are we agreeing again?
Oh my God.
The first one, and we are learning. And actually, like, you go to a lot of places and companies that do pay for that kind of sponsorship, they actually often do...
They get it.
They get it. They're considerate of the position they're in, and they do try to send someone who's not going to give a sales pitch.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So, yes, Ryan, we agree with you. Charlie is wrong again. Charlie, definition of insanity, trying to do the same thing time after time and expect a different result? I don't know. Enough said. By the way, Charlie, love you. I think you're great. Right. So, what was that? Oh, yes, Tweet of the Week. Thank you very much, Andy.
Tweet of the Week.
Well, we are coming up onto the hour yet again. So, gentlemen, thank you so much for your time. Jav, thank you, sir.
Thank you very much. It's always a pleasure, never a chore.
Always, always. Thank you, and have a lovely weekend. And Andy, thank you, sir.
Stay secure, my friends.
Stay secure.
You've been listening to the Host Unknown podcast. If you enjoyed what you heard, comment and subscribe. If you hated it, please leave your best insults on our Reddit channel.
Worst episode ever.
r/smashing security.
No, so I, no, just on that science-y thing, I can tell you the difference between an enzyme and a hormone.
What?
I've never heard an enzyme.
Ha, 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 ha.